On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we go through the wormhole to Gargantua as we look for Christian themes in Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. Coop will have to put his faith in something. Will it be in the deception of Dr. Mann or in the love that transcends time and space? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Come on in, admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 71. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You are tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
You love Bane.
I love Christopher Nolan.
Oh, man, and this is another Christopher Nolan film we're going to do today. What?
Interstellar.
Yes! But first, did we do Christopher Nolan last week? What did we talk about last week?
No, last week we didn't even do a movie.
We didn't?
No, last week, if you
remember. There was no show?
If you remember, Michael,
yes.
Last week we had our special episode. Our first special episode since, and I said it wrong in the last episode, but our first special episode since episode 28.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a mess of episodes in between. We need to get back on track and doing special episodes every once in a while.
Yeah.
We got some good feedback that seems to indicate that at least one person would like to is looking forward to the next special episode. So more on that when we get to our feedback segment. But did you have anything that you needed to tack on, amend, addendumize? Another thing?
I don't think that's an actual verb, but good try.
It is now
good
on
try.
Finding Christ in Cinema.
It is Thursday afternoon, and sometimes on Thursday afternoons, Michael cannot English very well.
No!
So
I'm too excited, and especially after we just had our warm-up.
We just got pumped.
Yes, we did.
We got hyped.
I do need to make a correction, Brendan.
Well, go ahead.
I misrepresented my movie viewing habits last week. I said I hardly ever watch movies, and that's not really true because I spend an awful lot of time watching James Cagney films, Frank Sinatra films. I like Bob Hope and Bing Crosby films.
Road to Bali?
all those. I watch a bunch of old movies. I always have, and that's what I – in fact, if any movie where men are wearing nice hats, fedoras, I'm all in. So there you go. I did want to miss her. Oh, and I did watch another film this week, and we'll get to that in our well-mannered frivolity segment later on. But if you don't have anything else to tack on, are you ready to go to the movies?
Oh, I'm ready.
Here we go. Back in time.
What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to give it something socially responsible to do.
Can't we just let it go?
This thing needs to learn how to adapt, Murph.
Okay, let's mask up.
Like the rest of us.
This world's a treasure. It's been telling us to leave for a while now.
Your daughter's generation will be the last to survive on Earth. You're the best pilot we ever had. Get out there and save the world.
Everybody ready to say goodbye to our solar system?
To our galaxy.
Here we go.
We're here.
Want to get down fast, don't we?
Actually, we want to get there in one piece.
Hang on.
Our mission does not work if the people on Earth are dead by the time we pull it off.
Well, we got this far, farther than any human in history.
Oh, not far enough.
make it count.
There's the mountains.
Those aren't mountains. They're waves.
Am I going to make it?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
You might have to decide between seeing your children again and the future of the human race.
We'll find a way. We always have.
Man, I missed the film when it was in the theaters.
I didn't.
And
oh, man.
So this is the first time that I seen it this past week, and I watched it 2.5 times and blown away. You wouldn't give me any spoilers.
No.
And in fact, as a matter of fact, let's just start off right now. We are going to spoil this film.
Now, Michael, what do you mean by spoil?
You're going to learn a lot of things about the plot and twists. I mean, come on. We're going to give away a lot of things about this film if you have not watched it.
Oh, man.
And yet you feel want to watch it.
Oh, man.
What? What?
Oh, man.
Are you encouraging people to stop listening right now?
No, I'm leaving a pun.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man. Spelled with two N's. Oh, man.
Oh.
Oh, see what I did
there? Yes, okay. Well, and then I'm going to pull out mine.
Hold on. No.
What?
No. So, you know, we all know this movie stars Matthew McConaughey, standout performance, which we'll get to in a second.
Uh-huh.
However, since Michael loves these old movies, he kind of imagined what it would be like if Marlon Brando...
Interstellar!
And that's your joke for this episode.
Yay, and all the kids, everybody, the studio audience, listen, here comes the lady.
No, hold on, it's a little bit later. There it is. There she is. Okay.
She's having a good time that day. All right. What are your thoughts? What were your first impressions on this film?
Okay. Upon first viewing, and I say that because, like we were talking about before the microphones were hot.
Yes.
With Christopher Nolan films, they're going to go by fast, and if you're not paying absolutely 100% attention, you will miss something.
This movie didn't seem as long as The Dark Knight Rises to me, but it's longer.
It's longer.
By like 6 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you're, like I said, if you're not watching, you're going to miss something. So when I first saw it in theaters back in November of last year, I was kind of disgruntled. I felt like I had been shortchanged. I was like...
I do remember you weren't that impressed.
What just happened? No, well, it's not that I wasn't impressed. It was just sensory overload.
Okay.
Like, I didn't know what to think. Christopher Nolan, he did it again.
Yeah.
You know, whatever he does, he did it again.
I agree.
And it's this thing with Christopher Nolan movies, you'll watch it the first time, and you won't completely understand it. But you find that one thing that you want to go back and watch it again for. So you watch it for the second time, and then you follow that one thing you wanted to follow, but then you find something else that, oh, wait a minute. But if that, then this, you know, so you watch it a third time and you follow with the first two things. But in that third time, what happens again? You say, there's something else in here. It keeps going.
So now
it was the same thing with Inception,
The Dark Knight.
I was going to say for me with the entire Dark Knight trilogy, not just with Rises, but all three films. I kind of want to go back and see some of his earlier stuff.
Right. Well,
you know,
I still think of the films that I've seen, I haven't seen Memento, and
that's what I had in mind.
I need to watch that.
Yeah.
I still think that, and I love Inception. That's one of my all-time favorite movies because it is just a great premise. But The Prestige is a serious mind bender.
It is.
However, you know, so I'm looking like I'm. Like, I don't know why I do this, but I go to IMDb and I start looking at some reviews and you see 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, then 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. These people that are giving it 10, they're liars. They're being paid by the movie studio. This is the worst movie I've ever seen. I feel completely ripped off. I think those people that are giving ones are like the one-time viewers that just were not able to wrap their head around it. I don't know what.
Well, see, like, I sympathize with those people because I couldn't wrap my head around it the first time I saw it.
Right.
I still can't wrap my head around it. And I watched it at least four times in the past couple weeks.
Yeah.
Because I rented it last week just because. And then this week when we're actually doing it for the show, I'm like, oh, good. I've already got stuff going in my head.
Yes.
So, oh.
And it's hard to grasp onto those things. Yeah. I've watched it several times this past week. Well, 2.5 times, like I said. And you know, see something. Oh, I want to, you know, and you're trying to grasp onto that. And then all of a sudden you're into this other thing. You say, wait, I want to grab that too. It's like, you know, those squishy water balloon things that are like circular. You try and hold onto them and they jump out of your hand.
Oh, it just keeps, yeah, it just keeps going. Yeah.
It's like that.
Fun for hours.
But I'll tell you what, I think that one particular aspect of this film has helped me to understand just a little bit better the concept of eternity. You know, go ahead.
What could it be that not just helping your understanding of eternity, but helping you understand that you can't understand it?
Well, exactly. But also a great visual that people can use. A lot of us like to use, if God, how can God know the beginning from the end? Well, and we use that that word picture of him. Well, you're watching a parade. If you're down on street level and you're part, you know, you are basically in the parade, you can only see one as it comes and it passes, right? You can only see a fixed point in time. But if you are up above the parade, such as in a blimp,
yeah,
you can see the beginning of the parade and you can see the end of the parade and you can look at any particular point in time that you want to at any time that you want. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought that was a very adequate explanation. It gives me something to visualize. But this film, you know, they're at the catharsis, I guess.
Oh,
or
man.
I don't know. Would you consider that section part of the catharsis?
Yeah, because through that, or just the word catharsis reminding. The word catharsis means emotional release.
Yeah.
And it's whenever, I think the ultimate catharsis happens when.
In the hospital.
No.
No?
No, no, no. No, before that. No.
Oh, okay.
Before. Matthew McConaughey, he's in that space
time. Okay, so that's what I'm talking
about.
He's
in that, but it doesn't happen until Murph realizes that he's the ghost.
I think it's a combination of because he was going to be lost until Tars starts to talk to him again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Tars, you made it. And then that helped him because now he has another person to rely on and to understand what's going on. Because Tars told him, this is what's going on. This is where you are right now.
Doesn't that point to what we're going to talk about? He couldn't do it himself, even in the space-time dimension.
Yeah.
He had to have an other.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so let's give some shout-outs here because Matthew McConaughey, I have never seen him in anything.
Really?
No. Blown away by this guy's acting ability.
All right. Yeah.
And I like that he just turned his Texas accent to 11. In this one,
I don't know
if that's the way he really talks.
It is.
Okay. Well,
pretty much, he
is a presence he carried this film, as far as I'm concerned. He and little Murph, little Mackenzie Foy.
Yeah.
I think that little girl did a fantastic job.
I agree.
As little Murph.
Especially the whole sequence when, you know, he's promised that he's never going to fly again.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to fly again. Yep. That whole scene where he's trying to tell her bye, you know, don't leave me like this, Murph.
Yep.
And the way she carries her little part, which is not really that little, it's very heavy, actually.
What about Big Murph?
Big Murph, Jessica Chastain.
Yeah.
She wins my heart every time. I don't know what to tell you.
I know I've seen her in something, but I can't... I can't place it, but I thought she did a fantastic job walking that tightrope of this absolute pain that she has carried her whole life. You know, and really, you see it when she finally broadcasts to her dad to tell him that it's her birthday, right?
And she's just as old as he was when he left.
So this would be the perfect time for you to come home, come back, like you promised come back like you promised. Oh, a little bit more on that later on. FCC's very own Anne Hathaway.
Bubba. My personal favorite performance in the whole film.
She's a fantastic actress.
Yeah.
She won me over in, of course, episode number 25 of Finding Christ in Cinema. We covered Les Miserables.
Les Mis.
Yeah.
Man, that episode was it was just less miserable than anything we've ever done.
Everybody go back and listen to that episode. And then as Catwoman, she was able to portray, she knows that she's a sinner. She needs a way out. She was able to portray that so effectively. What about this performance as Dr. Brand did you think was
of Amelia?
Yeah.
Okay. The way that she went from, and again, this we talked about this with Dark Knight Rises and her playing Selina Kyle, being able to switch to different types of characters.
Yeah.
Because that's how she was written. That's how her character was written.
Yeah.
But she, as the actress, could visibly put it to life.
Yeah.
She goes from, like, you know, the caring, nurturing, but, you know, still a little firm when she's handling the young Murph.
Yes.
You know.
She started off the role with absolute confidence.
Yeah.
Absolute confidence. And then when you find out, she's completely motivated by her love for this other astronaut, this other person. And you, I mean, the way that she just carries it and transitions to that, it was just so natural and so believable. And we'll play a little bit of one of her dialogues later on.
Yeah, well, monologue, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But then again, there's also the scene where they're at Gargantua.
Uh-huh.
And Tars has just detached, and then she doesn't get it yet, but the whole plan, and this is one of the things that I love rewatching something, because you know what's going to happen when, to a certain character, they don't know. That is drama. That is the textbook.
And why does it affect me the same way every single time I see it? I know what the outcome is going to be. Yeah. Why does it affect me?
I don't know. That's something I can't explain.
Why? Why? I know what's going to happen when Cooper enters into that hospital room and finally it sees Murph. She gets to see her dad again. I know what is going to happen. Why does that cause the same tears to fall? I think it kind of like ties into Dr. Brand's monologue. We'll explore that a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. Let's jump on. What about FCC's very own Michael Caine as Professor Brand?
Did you not want to not only cry when he finally confesses, but also just, I wanted to punch him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, how dare you send these people out into space to die? But that's his character. He as a performer himself, I love.
Well,
I love every time.
And then, well, of course. But then you go back to his character and you start to analyze what is his motivation. Why is he doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to see he's been carrying a very heavy burden getting back to
Pilgrim's Progress,
our favorite
baby.
Book.
Yes. FCC's very own
Pilgrim's Progress.
Even in that, the first scene. And it's actually a sound clip we'll listen to when he says, look, by the time you get back, I will have solved the problem of gravity. Promise. I promise.
Yeah.
Or that is my word.
Yeah.
Or I give you my word. He says that. And if you, once you've seen it the first time and you know that he's lying this whole time, he can still, he can still deliver the line to Matthew McConaughey, because the character already is lying.
Yeah.
And it's one thing when you've got an actor saying something that isn't true, but when the character is saying something that isn't true to another character and wants that character to believe that it's true, that's so complex.
Yeah.
That it blows me away every time. And when I was watching it this week, that scene in particular, I'm looking at Dr. Brand and I'm just thinking, how can you say that?
Yeah.
You know, the whole time. This whole time, he's showing him the new space station. Oh, we've gone underground, but we're still funded. You know, this whole time he's talking to Coop. And I'm thinking, you dirty man.
Yep.
You
Yep.
I wasn't that clean in my head. I'm going to be honest with you. I was not that clean.
You stinker.
you big stinker.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about... I want to shout out to the voice behind TARS, Bill Irwin.
Okay.
Bill Irwin is Mr. Noodle on Elmo's World. Okay. Look, it's Mr. Noodle. Okay, he's Mr. Noodle. He actually went to clown school. That's what I mean. That's his background in entertainment.
Wow.
And so, don't tell me you don't know Mr. Noodle in Elmo's World. I'm not going to believe it at all. Okay, now, but he's also the dad in I can't remember the dad who in How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Really?
Yes, he is. So when you're watching that this year for Christmas, maybe we'll do that for Christmas this year. Because we did the animated Grinch last year. Okay, now I'm getting off.
Sure.
Anyway, he's the voice of TARS. I love how they made the robots have a natural language. And I love that they had emotion in there. And I love the way that Bill Irwin voiced them.
I think TARS and Case were hilarious.
Yeah. Yep.
The humor setting, 75%. Yes.
But Bill Irwin, I mean, even when in the catharsis as it's building up to it, in that three dimensional representation of a five dimensional reality, when Cooper discovers that TARS is with him again, and he doesn't even treat TARS like a robot. He always says "we." We, mm-hmm. you and I, you know, it's really neat. I like that. And so I thought that was played off very well. I want to do give a shout out to young, this Timothy Calumet as the young Tom, 15-year-old Tom, the brother.
Oh, yes.
He played a great 15-year-old.
I think so, too.
What about the flat tire? That's something I can hear my son saying. In fact, I'm going to show that scene to my son. Look, Micah.
I was like, well, I guess that answers the old if I ask you to drive off a cliff scenario.
But who I didn't know was old Tom is Casey Affleck, brother of Batfleck.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know that I've ever seen him in anything, but as I'm looking at him, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, that's definitely... I can't remember. What's Batfleck's
first Ben name? Affleck.
Yeah, Ben. That's definitely, this guy's definitely related to Ben. And he did a wonderful job. Matt Damon as the guest star.
Again, this is that thing where once you see the film the first time and you warm up to this character, you let these characters into your heart. And when you are betrayed by Dr. Mann, again, it's the same thing. How dare you?
Yeah.
It's that moment. But he, as the actor, Matt Damon, did it so well.
Able to portray the desperation.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about that later on.
Okay. He was, blew me away. At first, when I'm sitting going, he is so rotten that I don't like this character at all, and so therefore I don't like Matt Damon in this movie. And then the second time, he nailed it.
Yeah.
They said, Matt, we need you to come in and play Dr. Mann. He is absolutely overwhelmed with desperation and the drive to live. Mm-hmm. He will do anything to survive. Okay, I think I got it.
He was so, and he resisted for years to press that button.
Yeah.
But
oh, man, when they first wake him up. Come on, tell me that should have won an award of some sort, where he just immediately looks into Cooper's face and then breaks down weeping. Yeah.
And that's what made his way into my heart. I'm like, oh, this poor, this poor unfortunate soul. And then he does that. He does his thing.
And then he turns into, he's a stinker.
Yes.
Any other shout outs that you want to?
I'm looking over the list. John Lithgow.
Yeah.
that was pretty good, actually. I liked it.
As the father-in-law. What's the relation here? And it turns out that he was the father of Cooper's deceased wife.
Yeah.
And, you know, his motivation. Hey, you got to just get your head in the game. Take care of these kids. Go out here and get yourself another wife while you're at it. And just deal with what's going on here.
He says he's got to repopulate the planet.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very matter of fact.
Yeah,
practical person.
But he's soft around the edges, I think.
Oh yeah,
character. I mean, but you know,
I mean, he didn't put up too much of a stink when Cooper says, "I'm leaving. You're in charge of the kids." forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know what actually is going to happen.
Should we mention the school principal?
Yeah, he did a great job.
David Oyelowo?
Yeah.
Did he look familiar to you?
No.
He's the guy that plays Martin Luther King Jr. in Selma.
Oh! I need to see that movie.
You do.
Okay,
we can actually put it to our list.
Yeah, okay, and I thought that the interaction between Cooper and the principal was very natural.
Mm-hmm. The teacher bugged me. but that was her role, so she did it right.
Yeah, you know. She was supposed to. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, how grating it was when she says, "I think it was propaganda designed to bankrupt Russia." Oh, brother, I can't even listen to this. Mm.
Her name is Colette Wolfe, by the way. She played Miss Hanley, and she played her quite well.
Well, Colette, good job on making me despise your character, David Gyasi, as Romilly.
Romilly, yes. I thought you would never come.
He was a broken man.
Yes.
Oh, could you imagine that 20-something years? 20-something years stuck on that spaceship.
Oh, we have to talk about Wes Bentley.
Okay.
As Doyle.
Yeah. What did you think about that character as a whole?
Kind of distant at first, and you didn't really get to know until he was on the ship.
He was the first game designer, or whatever it's called, in the Hunger Games, just to let everybody know that.
Oh, the Game Maker.
Game Maker, yes. Yes.
And just when they're on the first planet, I mean, come on. That kind of sets the tone for the rest of the trip.
That's right. So. When you're watching this film, hopefully when we're doing these shout-outs, the purpose of this is to get you to focus on certain aspects of their performance in order to appreciate their craft, and how the story unfolds. And, a lot of thought goes into selecting these actors. Now, I think that Christopher Nolan, there are certain people. Okay, Michael Caine's in every single movie I make. I'm going to squeeze Matt Damon in some, mm-hmm. Leonardo DiCaprio
and others.
And Hathaway. You know, he has this group of people that he likes to work with. Obviously, you got a whole bunch of people from Inception in the Dark Knight films.
Tom Hardy actually played two different characters in the Batman trilogy.
He did?
He was a police officer in either Batman Begins or The Dark Knight.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
And then he comes back as Bane.
He's back.
Yeah.
As Bane. Okay. Yeah. Good deal. Let's go ahead and, this movie, a lot to wrap our minds around. Do you think that we can pull out some tools? Can we redeem this film for Jesus? Can we give listeners the tools that they need in order to go out and use this film as a springboard or an opportunity to tell somebody about the good news of Jesus?
Oh, I believe so.
Okay.
Now, granted, you may have to watch it like 3 or 4 times
uh-huh.
to get it, but that's why we're here, so you don't have to.
We'll watch it three or four times.
We will save you 10 hours in watching this movie.
It's a time-saving show. That's why you should listen to this podcast, so you can save time.
That's right. It's all 70 minutes. So, as we've learned through other films that we've actually covered, namely through Avengers, mankind has to put its faith in something. Mankind will always want to put its faith in something, whether it's God and his abilities, or man and man's abilities, or some type of creation.
Faith fills a vacuum.
It does.
Okay.
Because faith operates without evidence. You can have faith when you don't have evidence,
and you can have faith when you do have evidence. So it's ubiquitous.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we hear Dr. Brand, Michael Caine's character, talk about this, quote, unshakable faith as he's explaining the dire situation to Coop at the NASA laboratory.
Blight. Wheat 7 years ago. Okra this year. Now there's just corn.
And we're growing more than we ever have.
Well, with likely potatoes in Ireland and the wheat in the Dust Bowl.
The corn will die. Soon.
We'll find a way, Professor. We always have.
driven by the unshakable faith the Earth is ours.
Well, not just ours, no. But it is our home.
And there, we hear two different, we can hear two different attitudes. We can hear Dr. Brand's attitude of, look, time's going and time's going fast. Something needs to happen. But we also hear the hopefulness of Coop. He says, let's see, what does he say? He says, first, he says, and we're growing more than we ever have. Like, look, we've got this. We've got the corn problem solved. We will never run out of corn. But that's what people said about wheat. That's what people said about okra. Yeah. You know, and honestly, I could do without okra. I don't like it.
That's shame on you.
Sorry.
We didn't need you to say that because now people are going to think less of you. You shouldn't have done that.
Well, it's the same thing with Star Wars. Anyway, so.
Hey, you're either a Star Wars fan or you're wrong.
There you go.
Okay.
I knew it was coming.
Yes.
And, you know, Professor Brand, he, even in this scene right now, we can see this seed of nihilism. We can see that he's not too sure that mankind's going to survive this one.
That's right.
At least not with Plan A. And, you know, the film goes into Plan A is finding a new home for the humans that are alive right now, or Plan B, some kind of hyper-medical colonization of the planets.
Starting with some seeds.
With cells.
Yeah.
With the cells by themselves. No incubation.
Yeah.
Well, you know, not hardly any. And Dr. Brand talks about this unspeakable faith. Or no, this unshakable faith, excuse me. Give me that mulligan.
Already?
Yeah. Dr. Brand talks about the unshakable faith that Coop has. And really, I think Coop in this film represents humankind, mankind on the whole. We're persistent. We're
tenacious.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but we can endure.
Well, we have this innate instinct to survive. We talked about that about Dr. Mann. It's in humans to survive, and Cooper's going to do everything that he possibly can to survive and to save his children and the rest of the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and right now Coop understands that he has to play a smaller part in a bigger plan. Which plan is he going to put his faith in?
Mm.
Is it going to be Dr. Brand's gravity equation?
How far have you got?
Almost there.
You're asking me to hang everything on an almost.
I'm asking you to trust me. Find us a new home. And by the time you return, I will have solved the problem of gravity. I give you my word.
Oh, big words.
Bold statement yes. There, sir, especially considering that you've already solved the equation even before the first Lazarus missions.
That's what Dr. Mann told us.
Whoo, man. This, oh,
Dr. Mann.
Oh, Dr. Ooh, Mann.
Dr. Mann.
Oh, man.
Oh, with two ends.
Whoo. Okay, so, and McConaughey, Coop, he's up front. He says, you're asking me to hang everything that I stand for on an almost. That is a tremendous leap of faith.
Yes.
On an almost.
Oh, leap of faith. Get back to Inception. Listen to the Inception
episode. And getting back to Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan seems to be all about the leap of faith.
I think he's a man of faith.
Hmm. Well, I'll have to look into that.
Okay.
Possibly get him on the show.
Yeah, now, please. With Tom Hanks.
Oh.
Epic. Okay. Best podcast ever.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, he doesn't want to put everything he has on Dr. Brand's equation, but Dr. Brand is asking him to trust him. That goes a lot into my key text. And you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and bring up the key text because I'm going to keep repeating it.
Okay. Yeah, good idea. Again.
Psalm 118, verse 8. Not 11, verse 8. It is better to take refuge in the Lord rather than trust in men.
Oh, winner, winner, chicken dinner. You know, you get one of these. I like that. Okay, carry on.
Thank you.
Okay.
Or you could read it as, it is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in Dr. Man. Because Dr. Man, keep in mind this whole time, there were three Lazarus missions that went out.
Yes.
The first planet was that our crew visits is, his name was Miller,
I think. And this was just one system. This was just one system.
This is just the one system.
Out of 10, I think.
Yeah. Okay. It keeps expanding. Miss Miller's planet, it had everything that it needed to start life, but the terrain was too treacherous, really, because the giant waves,
they kind of goof stuff up.
Those aren't mountains.
No.
No, those are waves. Wait, that one's going away. You know, yeah. Go to the back of the ship and see the wave that's coming towards you. They get to that planet, and while it has the certain ingredients, it's just not the right conditions. They have another option they could go to is Dr. Edmund's planet, and Amelia Brand really wants to go there, and the data is very promising. However, Mr. Edmund's has stopped transmitting.
And Dr. Mann
is still transmitting.
And saying, "Everything, the water is fine, come on in."
Yep. Let's make sure that's the right clip. Yes, yeah, let's listen to that little conversation.
Tars kept the Endurance right where we needed her, but the trip took years longer than we anticipated. We no longer have the fuel to visit both prospects, so we have to choose. But how? They're both promising. Yeah, Edmund's letter is better, but Dr. Mann is the one still transmitting. So.
We've no reason to suspect Edmund's data would have soured. His world has key elements to sustain human life.
As does Dr. Mann's.
Hey, they've got a big decision to make here.
They do, and Coop seems somehow more trusting in Dr. Mann's data because he's the one that's still transmitting.
And Dr. Brand has been saying this whole trip how Dr. Mann is the best of us. He's a genius.
Quote, remarkable.
He's the one that was able to get people to sacrifice their own lives in order to fulfill this mission.
And after hearing her say that, it made me wonder, how did he convince them? Because you knew he had to lie. Yes, it was deception.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know what
Christopher Nolan's Deception.
In Deception.
In Deception. In
Interstellar-eption.
Yes. Interstellar! I used it twice.
Oh, my goodness. Meanwhile, back on Earth.
Yes.
Back in our current time frame. Actually, it's all in the future, so scratch that. But back on Earth, Dr. Brand, Michael Caine's character, is on his deathbed. And he calls for Murph. He says, "Murph, I need you to come in. I got something to tell you."
"Good, good. You had faith. All those years. I asked you to have faith. I wanted you to that your father would come back.
I do, Professor.
Forgive me, Murph.
There's nothing to forgive.
I lied, Murph. I lied to you. There was no need for him to come back. There was no way to help us.
But Plan A, all this, all these people, the equation. Did my father know? Did he leave me?
Excellent timing, too.
Oh, man. And we failed to give a shout-out to Hans Zimmer.
Shame on you.
All right, fine, whatever, I'll take it. The entire soundtrack to this film, I love it. Now, granted, I got it at Hastings a couple weeks ago, and it is not driving music. It will put you to sleep if you're tired. But just the way it's orchestrated, yeah. the electric organs and the, you know, the soft synthesizer pad really reflects, you know, what we think about space.
Ethereal.
Ethereal.
Yeah, sorry.
Ethereal.
Sorry.
Didn't she marry Fred?
Yes. Ethereal.
Anyway. Ethereal. So, okay. So right now we see that we cannot put our faith in Dr. Brand. We can't, because the whole thing was a lie. And what's worse is that Dr. Man, who's on this, you know, frozen cloud planet, which should be obvious that there's no life there, yeah. But...
Well, and he did, I mean...
He did his job to deceive the others.
Well, like, he's going to tell us.
He's about to tell us right now.
You faked all the data.
Yeah.
There's no surface.
No. I tried to do my duty, Cooper, but I knew the day that I arrived here that this place had nothing. And I resisted the temptation for years. But I knew that if I just pressed that button, then somebody would come and save me.
You coward.
Yes. 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 Yes.
That's a fantastic performance.
Okay. Let's just look at all this. You faked all the data. Yes, there's no surface. No. This is where we can see mankind getting weary. Now, just to throw it in there, we can also see it through the adult Murph, Jessica Chastain. We see that because she begins to question whether or not her dad's really coming back. Dr. Mann was in the same predicament. He began to doubt and to question whether or not someone was actually going to come back for him. And apparently the situation was, if you don't find a way to support life, don't press the button.
Yeah.
Because he
don't
says...
Don't have anybody come here. It costs a lot of resources.
Yeah. Yeah. And he says that he resisted the temptation for years... Yeah. But he knew that if he just pressed that button, somebody would come and save me. He got desperate. This is where we're going to talk about a little bit of desperation. Because this type of desperation that isn't met with some revelation of love and of comfort, it goes deeper and deeper and turns into just utmost depravity. And this...
Read your key text again.
It is better to take refuge in the Lord rather than trust in man.
So we already know that to trust in Dr. Man is going to put you in a precarious situation. Death, really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what would have happened. But you trust in the Lord because he is not subject to desperation.
Mm-hmm.
He's not subject to that human depravity.
Right.
Wow.
And here's where Matt Damon stands out to me in performance. He puts on his character as a soft character.
Yeah.
He's not very intimidating. He's soft spoken. He seems genuine. He seems endearing. What kills me is when Coop finally calls him a coward.
Yeah.
He goes on and, you know, they start fighting and, you know, all this, you know, menace, the scene happened, you know, they just fight and the camera pans out. His response to being called a coward is just simply, yes.
Yes.
You're right. Yes.
Yep.
Yes. And that made me mad. How can you do it? It's just, it's making my blood boil right now. And then after when he finally cracks his glass, when he starts headbutting him, Coop says, look, you've got a 50-50 chance of killing yourself. He says, that's the best chance. Those are the best odds I've had in years.
Desperation.
Yes, and, you know, he cracks Cooper's glass, he starts breathing in the ammonia, Dr. Man starts walking away, and he turns around to look, he wants to, I don't know if he's just sick, if he's getting some sort of pleasure out of watching someone die.
I don't think it is. I think that he has been utterly ruined by this experiment, this mission. It ruined him. He thought he was this kind of a person, and it turned out he was the exact opposite. And he knows it. That's why he's saying that. That's why he doesn't deny. Yeah. He doesn't even deny. He says, you're right. You are right. But I have to, this is what I have to do to survive. And for me to survive, you can't survive. I'm sorry. I'm here for you. And it's depraved and twisted and sick
and
and human.
What really breaks my heart
yes.
is when he's watching him and then he says, I'm sorry, Cooper. I can't watch look. You. And
I
he
turns his back.
I thought I could. I'm sorry. I can't. Think of your children. And he turns off his transmitter.
Wow.
Or his communication device. He turns it off. He just walks away.
Can you see him? Can you see him?
Oh.
Wow.
Dr. Man. But like you said, that is human.
Yes.
That is human when we are left to our own devices.
Yes.
And especially when we buy into a lie. When we buy into deception, when we buy into any of that, when we put our unshakable faith in something that isn't even founded, that's what happens. And that's the message that I'm coming at.
Yeah.
And it's going to go right into yours, Michael, because what we can put our faith in and what Dr. Koop should have put his faith in is the love. Specifically for Koop. Not only the love that he had for his own family, and we saw how much it tore him up to, you know, miss, you know, one grandchild. He didn't even realize that he had another one.
Yeah.
We saw it, and the whole relationship.
He didn't
between,
know that he had little Cooper.
Mm-mm. No, he didn't.
Oh.
And, I mean, he found out later, but at the time on the spaceship, he didn't know because Jesse, not Jesse, Tom, stopped transmitting.
Yeah. Because his wife said, he's gone, you have to let him go.
You have to let him go. Wow. So this is me letting you go.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, of course, Murph comes back, but she's still hurting.
Okay, there is a motivation that Cooper picked up on early in the mission, and he even asked Tars about it.
He does, yes. And that's what I love, going back and watching it, too, because he picked up on it.
Yeah.
He says, look, did Amelia and Edmonds, are they a thing? And he's like, I also have a discretion setting.
Okay, so getting back to why they went to Dr. Mann's planet in the first place was because, why? Why did Cooper make that decision?
Because Mann was the one that was still transmitting.
Okay, yes. And so he thought, but now Dr. Brand is saying over and over again, but the data that we got from Edmund's planet is much more promising.
It is better. Even yes. Romilly even says yes. that. He says, look, Edmund's data is better, but he's not transmitting anymore.
But then Cooper turns around and says, well, wait a second. We have to come clean, Dr. Brand. We have to come clean with Rom. Tell him.
He deserves to know.
Yeah. And what does she tell him?
And she tells him that she is in love with Dr. Edmonds.
Yes. And so because of that, what does Cooper assume?
He assumes, and you know, rightfully so.
Yes.
Rightfully so.
He had to make a decision.
Yeah.
Based on all the information that he had.
He assumed that she was making that decision only because she loved Dr. Edmonds
and what does she say?
She wanted to see him. And she says, yeah.
Yeah, my heart is pulling me.
And she says, you can't tell me that doesn't mean anything. Let's listen.
This is, to me, the pivotal monologue of this film, because we're going to find out a little bit later on. What she's talking about here has been misnomered in other places about what's going on. So let's listen to Dr. Brand talk about love.
You're a scientist, Brand.
So listen to me. When I say that love isn't something we invented, it's observable, powerful. It has to mean something.
Love has meaning, yes. Social utility, social bonding, child rearing.
We love people who have died. Where's the social utility in that?
None.
Maybe it means something more, something we can't yet understand. Maybe it's some evidence, some artifact of a higher dimension that we can't consciously perceive. I'm drawn across the universe to someone I haven't seen in a decade, who I know is probably dead. Love is the one thing we're capable of perceiving that transcends dimensions of time and space. Maybe we should trust that, even if we can't understand it yet.
Maybe we should trust that love.
Yeah.
Even if we can't understand it. Even if it's more persuasive that Dr. Mann is still transmitting, maybe we should just go ahead and go to the better data. That's better in the first place. They all know that it's better. And I think it mentioned that Dr. Mann's planet just happened to be closer at that moment in time, and that was also on Coop's mind. He's like, well, let's just go ahead and get the closer one first. That's still
because then if we find out it's great, which I'm hoping for, I'm hanging my hat on this, then we have enough fuel to get back home.
Yeah.
So let's unpack a little bit more of this this monologue. You're a scientist, Brand. Love doesn't factor into this decision. We have to go by analytical...
Quantifiable.
Yes.
That's the word that is. They're all about using.
And she said, so listen to me when I say that love isn't something we invented. It's not owned by humans. We don't have a market on that. We can't stick our flag into that planet, the planet of love, and say we, or as a as explorers, and say we claim love as human enterprise now, as a human possession. We didn't invent it, and it is observable. It's observable, Cooper. It's not just something, just a word. It has to mean something. Well, and he responds as a scientist. Yes. Love has meaning. It's great for social utility, social bonding, and especially child rearing. Because when two parents love each other, they're going to raise up children in that love. And yes, it has. And he's right. It does have function.
A quick note on the word observable.
Uh-huh.
It reminds me of what Jesus says about the Holy Spirit in John 3. When he's describing, you can't see the wind, but you can see it blowing in the trees.
You can observe what it's
doing. You can observe the effects. Yes. And through love, you can't see physically love. You can't see that. You have to wait and see its effects.
Yep. Well, and some of the effects, Cooper, he nails it. It has social utility, social bonding, child rearing. Yes, those are the effects of love. And she says, then why do we love people who have died? Where is the social? Where's the purpose in that? What good does that serve us? None. So explain that. And you know, that got him.
Yeah.
And she says, so maybe it means something more, something we can't yet understand. Maybe it's some evidence, some artifact of a higher dimension that we can't consciously perceive. And I say, Dr. Brand, you hit a home run on that one. I'm drawn across the universe, she says, to someone I haven't seen in a decade, who I know is probably dead. Love is the one thing that we're capable of perceiving that transcends time and space, and I submit that we can perceive ultimate love, and we'll get to that here in just a moment. So maybe we should trust that, she says. Even if we can't understand it yet. And it turns out she was right, which works really well for our purposes here of Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 71.
Because it's all about that leap of faith.
It is.
Which is so... I think that is Christopher Nolan's milieu.
That is his paradigm. His thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've got to take that leap of faith.
Okay, so let's focus on this a little bit. Maybe it's some evidence, some artifact of a higher dimension. Perhaps it is. Well, do we find out that is the case? I believe that we do, because when everything goes bad and Dr. Mann takes over the lander and ruins the Endurance. He ruins that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then Cooper and Tars and the other robot, they have to do all kinds of things in order to rectify this situation. It ends up with both Cooper and TARS in the black hole. They go into the black hole and they're falling in the black hole, and it gets really crazy. And so all of a sudden, Cooper finds himself in this very strange place where he's able to see, you know, itty bitty Murph. And he's actually seeing her in her room from behind her bookcase. And he's trying to get her attention, and he's banging and banging. You got to hear me. You got to hear Murph, Murph, Murph. And he's banging, and a book falls out.
Yeah.
And he's banging, and he's banging, and the little lunar lander falls off the shelf and breaks in half. All these things going on, but he can't get her to. He can't get her attention. He cannot communicate in this fashion, and so he's breaking down and weeping, and all of a sudden. All of a sudden, he hears something.
Cooper. Come in, Cooper.
Tars?
Roger that.
He survived.
Somewhere in their fifth dimension, they saved us.
Who the hell is they? And just why they want to help us, huh?
I don't know, but they constructed this three-dimensional space inside their five-dimensional reality to allow you to understand it.
Well, that ain't working.
Yes, it is. You've seen that time is represented here as a physical dimension. You have worked out that you can exert a force across space-time.
Gravity. To send a message.
Affirmative.
Gravity can cross the dimensions, including time.
Apparently.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mind-boggling. And it's this representation, as TARS says, they constructed this three-dimensional space inside their five-dimensional reality to allow you to understand. And what that's doing is allowing me to get a better glimpse of that blimp over the parade analogy. How is God being transcendent? How can he be in all places and all time? How can he see all things at all times? And I just think that this part of the movie just gives a great visual representation of that, especially as he moves on, and then he's like kind of going down at an angle real fast, and you just see all these everything flying by. It's in that room, and every moment that has happened in that room is there for him to look at and to he tries to interact
and to affect.
Yes. Yeah. And so finds out that, okay, great. So they constructed this three-dimensional space inside their five-dimensional reality to allow me to understand it. Well, it ain't working. And TARS, I love TARS. Yes, it is. It is working. You've seen that time here is represented as a physical dimension. Wait, what was that? What was that dimension? What was something about that? What does Dr. Brand say? Maybe love is some evidence, some artifact of a higher dimension. You've seen that time here is represented as a physical dimension. You have worked out that you can exert a force across space-time. Gravity, says Cooper, to send a message. TARS says affirmative. Cooper says gravity can cross the dimensions, including time. TARS says, apparently, that's his first assessment of what's going on. So that's when he starts to, okay, we're going to communicate. And then, wait a second. It is not gravity. It's love. It's love is causing this to happen. So he goes and he finds that point in time where that watch is on that bookcase. And he says, give me the information that... the information to solve this equation. I'm going to encode it into the watch. I'm going to send a sign. I'm going to communicate. Kind of how God enters into our three-dimensional space and communicates via love. Love. It's such an amazing illustration that Christopher Nolan came up with. Quite simply, Interstellar is the picture of a man trying to save himself, yet he cannot, because whatever can happen will happen. And that always includes seen and unforeseen circumstances. They cannot be circumvented by our own power, Brendan. Mm-hmm. We can't stop things from happening. But love. Murph knows that somebody outside our plane of existence is communicating with her. She's deciphered the communications. She's read the messages. She also has a father that loves her so much that he is willing to sacrifice himself to save her and the human race. He promises to find a new home for her. He promises to return for her. And she believes that he will, because love. Because love. Early in the movie, when he says, "I've got to go," and they're on her bed in her room, where he is behind the bookcases observing these moments. And she, as a little girl, what's her reaction going to be? Of course, you know, you're not coming. You don't even know.
It's me, Murph.
That's the wrong sound clip. Here we go.
You have no idea when you're coming back. No idea. Oh!
Don't make me leave like this. Come on, Murph. Don't make me leave like this, Murph. I love you forever. You hear me? I love you forever. And I'm coming back. I'm coming back.
Oh, man. So much drama, so much intrigue, so much hope, and such, to me, a picture. It just reminds me of Jesus. And how he created all things outside of our existence, transcendent, and yet entered in to a reality to communicate with us. Just one passage in Hebrews chapter 9, verses 11 and 12, talking about Jesus, as the high priest. In the New English Translation says, "But now Christ has come as the high priest of the good things to come. He passed through the greater and more perfect tent, not made with hands." This reminds me of this three-dimensional, what does Tar say? Three-dimensional space inside their five-dimensional reality.
Well, he calls it a tesseract.
Yes, he did. As a matter of fact, the tesseract is closing.
They're closing the tesseract. Yeah.
And so, it's just this multi-dimensional construct that makes a good image for us to grasp onto. Now, of course, God, I believe, is outside of all of our 10 dimensions. Astrophysicists believe that we live in a 10-dimensional universe. Four dimensions are knowable and six are unknowable. But this just gives that hint, that picture. He passed through the greater and more perfect tent, not made with hands, that is, not of this creation, outside of our creation, outside of these 10 dimensions. And he entered once for all into the most holy place, not by the blood of goats and calves, but by his own blood. And so he himself secured eternal redemption. Why? Because Jesus has the power to enter and exit our existence, our universe, by his own will. And how can that be? And how are we talking about this, all this time travel now, all of a sudden in the black hole? Now he's able to go to any single point in time in that bedroom, mm-hmm. and effect, cause and effect to communicate. Reminds me of John chapter 8, verses 56 through 58. And you want to read this whole chapter, friends, but these couple of verses. "Your father Abraham was overjoyed to see my day." What? What? "And he saw it and was glad. Then the Judeans replied, 'You are not yet 50 years old. Have you seen Abraham?' Jesus said to them, 'I tell you the solemn truth. Before Abraham came into existence, I am. Because there are some things that are able to cross all dimensions, including time. There are some things that are able to come from outside of our existence altogether and travel through space and time. Now, he makes a promise to her. I'm coming back. I'm coming back, Murph. And then, thereafter, after the Tesseract closes and he's deposited back into his own reality, his own timeline, yep. After all of relativity has had its effect on him and many years have been added since he left planet Earth. And so they say he's what, 122 years old? 124. Yeah. So let's just figure in the film, let's just say he was 40 years old. So, that's going to put him, how many years did he lose while he was out there?
A good 60.
Yeah, traversing black holes and going on strange planets and things like that. But he comes back and they say, to Cooper Station or whatever it's called, right?
Like, oh, y'all didn't have to name it after me.
Yes. They laughed, snickered. We didn't. No, it's after your daughter. Oh, man. And he goes into her room and she is a very old lady, and has a little conversation with her.
It's me, Mer. How is your ghost?
I know. People didn't believe me. They thought that I was doing it all myself. But I knew who it was. Nobody believed me. But I knew he'd come back.
How?
Because my dad promised me.
Oh! And for me, the movie ends right after that line, because my dad promised me. John chapter 14, verse 3 out of the New Living Translation. When everything is ready, Jesus says, I will come back and get you, so that you will always be with me where I am. I'm coming back, Murph. I'm coming back, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. I'm coming back, 12 apostles. I'm coming back, just like I told you I was. I'm coming back. And what did she say? I always knew it. And I would tell people, but they wouldn't believe me. They thought I was doing these things myself, but I always knew. How'd you know? Because my dad promised me. My dad promised me. And that love that transcends, that, as Dr. Brand said, a higher dimension that we can't consciously perceive. Your key text for this verse is John 3:16. I had to do it. Well, 16 through 18. Let's do that. I want people to start memorizing past just verse 16. 16 through 18 out of the New Living Translation, I think. For God loved the world so much that he gave his one and only Son, love, so that everyone who believes in him will not perish, but have eternal life. God sent his Son into the world, not to judge the world, but to save the world through him. There is no judgment against anyone who believes in him, old Murph. But anyone who does not believe in him has already been judged for not believing in God's one and only Son. The judgment's already been placed. If you reject him, then you die. Mm-hmm. You die. But he loved the world so much, and his love came down in bodily form, was able to penetrate time and space and any dimensions that you can come up with, physicists. God came and entered into to communicate with us, to communicate with that gravity, love. It's a great picture of the love of God and what God is capable of doing and what he has done, seen in Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. So do you have any questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks?
Oh, I do. And we're going to We're going to look at Mr. Wright again, Mr. N.T. Wright.
Yes.
With his angled mirror.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
The image of the angled mirror, because, yes, love came down. Love was the...
Conquered all.
Think about this. Love, the love that Coop had for Murph came down into her time through the vessel of gravity. Gravity carried that love down and, you know, boom. There, and she got that love, and it's that cause and effect. Because she first got that love, she was then able to save others. Because she got the love that came down, she was able to love outwardly.
Yes,
she saved. She saved the planet.
Yep.
Well, maybe not the planet, but she saved the people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what's important.
Right.
Because she was able to reflect the love that came to her, she was able to reflect it outward like an angled mirror. She was able to,
and she always told everybody, "I got it from my angel, who's my dad."
Mm-hmm. And you know, they didn't really understand that because it makes no sense. He's been dead, Murph. Come on, you know, get with the times. And then at the end, while she's in the hospital bed, she is able to reflect that back to him.
Yeah,
it's ooh.
Wonderful stuff.
Powerful stuff.
All right. Listener challenge. What Christian themes have you found in Interstellar? Three times. That's the third time.
Oh, goodness.
Marlon Brando starring in... There's a lot. There is so much to chew on. So many different things that we wanted to... That we could have... Different angles we could have gone. What did you find in Interstellar? Let us know. We'll give you all the ways to contact us in just a moment. But before that, we have some listener feedback. Oh, in fact, we are going once again.
Hold! Who goes there? It is I.
Patron Saint Philip and King Philip's Stables.
Yay.
What did he write? He left a comment on our special episode number 70, which is the special that he asked for. So I hope we did him right.
I'm sure we did.
Oh, Brendan's confident.
He says, "Great show, guys." And I got to zoom in again. My eyes are
old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My eyes are my buddy. Great show, guys. Job well done. And thanks to all your contributors, those who chimed in, as well as those who chimed in. John's thoughts on Plugged In are very similar to my own. I also use IMDb's Parent Guide and Common Sense Media, in large part because they give you a heads up on the content without so much value judgment.
Yeah, I use IMDb's parental guide.
As you find it Plugged In. Also, I think Plugged In is prone to including spoilers in the regular section of their reviews.
Oh, no!
Before you even go to the spoiler section.
They should have that playing on their site.
They should, okay. Yeah. Or just revealing too many plot points and details. Anime is less popular and harder to find advanced content warnings. And he gives us a link to a Christian anime site called Beneath the Tangles.
Oh, okay.
Where they give recommendations along with a content advisory.
I'm going to tell my kids on that.
There you go. Where you can find the show they're reviewing. John's points on violence and sex are also similar to my own. I am much more comfortable dealing with violent content versus sexual content, mainly because I can see something violent and not be tempted to go repeat the same
thing. Never tell me the odds.
What was that?
I was checking the volume on it.
Oh, my goodness. So I'm just going to repeat that just to make sure we heard it. I am much more comfortable dealing with violent content versus sexual content, mainly because I can see something violent and not be tempted to go out and repeat the act. But an explicit sex scene can stick in my head and be a source of temptation. Of course, there are probably some people who are indeed tempted to violent acts by seeing them on screen.
Absolutely.
But I think for most, that is not the case.
Probably true.
Whereas sex is more easily a temptation that can lead to sin. Even if it's just in the mind, it can still be sinful if dwelled upon.
Right.
Also, things that were more of a stumbling block for me at 23 are much less so at 43.
Amen. That's one of the benefits of old age.
There you go. But it's still important to have in mind their possible effect on me and those I watch it with or recommend it to.
See, the wisdom of patron Saint Philip.
He's got a lot.
Always
of,
comes through.
He's got some more of it.
Oh, good.
You guys talked about the horror genre a bit, which I dislike generally. When I was 8 years old, I saw the first original Friday the 13th in the theater, which was an uncomfortable parenting choice, I must say. My father, David Getty, took me to see The Crow. Oh, he didn't say that.
No.
My father, God love him, please, let two of my older sisters decide what to see, and they picked Friday the 13th over The Shining.
The Shining! The Shining needs to be on the list!
No. On what?
On Patron Saint Philip Presents The List! Oh! How could I have forgotten one of the greatest movies of all time?
I'll write that in there really quick.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I lost my spot.
They picked Friday the 13th.
I was literally traumatized. So terrified, I was unable to sleep in my room alone that night.
Yeah, I bet.
For many years after, I would check under my bed and my closet to make sure there was no one hiding in there.
That's like my wife and Swamp Thing.
Oh, man. If I came home to an empty house, I'd get a steak knife from the kitchen and check all the rooms to make sure I was indeed alone and safe.
Yeah,
I've gotten over that, but now, when a film is trying to scare me, I'm typically amused in a negative way or annoyed.
Yeah,
there can be a real and long-lasting consequences if we're not careful what we let our kids see.
Yes,
I really don't enjoy the thrill of being scared, and a verse that comes to my mind often when thinking of horror is 2 Timothy 1:7. Out of the American Standard Version, for God gave us not a spirit of fearfulness, but of power and love and discipline.
Yep.
Something to dwell on.
Yes.
He continues my approach to entertainment, and I really like this part. So let's everyone pay extra attention to this. My approach with entertainment is similar to how I approach people. I expect there to be moral flaws, objectionable material, and a need for grace, patience, and understanding. I have personally found that avoiding legalism with my entertainment has helped me to be more gracious and understanding with people.
Amen.
We should not assume that a fellow believer's tolerance of anything or anyone equates to tacit approval.
You know what? That is actually, I got to give it to him. Because that paragraph right there.
Yeah.
Patron St. Philip steps up to the plate. Here comes a horror movie. Boom! Ha! There it goes. It's going over the wall! We need to have a whole lot more grace, patience, and understanding when we are approaching people.
I agree.
I need it. So please.
I want to go ahead and throw in my personal comment right here. That reminds me of what James calls the law of liberty.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about that. You have just dove headlong into a study on the book of James.
Yeah. He says, you've got the law that, if you break... You've got the law, like the capital L law.
The Mosaic law.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, thank you. And if you want to be accountable for it, then you're going to be accountable for the whole thing.
Yeah.
And if you even slip up on the one slightest little minute thing, the rest of it weighs down on you just as hard.
So listen up, those of us who have a tendency towards legalism, stop. Okay, because you can't say, oh, well, we have to keep these things, but this isn't important anymore. James says specifically, if you are going to keep the Mosaic law, you must keep the Mosaic law. Period. In a story. That's what it was. You don't get to decide. So as Philip is encouraging us, we show a little more grace, patience, and understanding, and avoid that legalism. Avoid it.
Yeah.
It's no good.
And I'm going to toss this seed out here. Michael, I don't understand grace. I don't.
Me neither.
Not fully.
No.
But I've started for a while now, actually. And I keep coming back to this idea that Grace is withholding yourself. Grace is holding back. When you could judge, when you could fully judge somebody.
So that does fall right into the definition that I've always heard of unmerited favor.
Yes.
You're being a bad person. I could unload on you right now, but I'm showing you grace by holding back.
Yeah. Controlling our tongues is a big thing involving grace.
Yes, it is. It's probably the hardest thing, and James tells us about that little tongue.
Oh, I'm about to get to that in my study a little bit
later.
Well, more on that study here in a
second. There you go. So let's finish up with Phillips.
Let's continue this. When it comes to our sons, 21 and 10... Oh, my.
That's an 11-year spread.
Oh, sir. my wife and I have taken the approach that we're more concerned with their attitude and heart than...
Content.
Okay. Yep. For some reason, I read content, like the attitude, not content.
than being content. We'd rather them... Oh, yeah. We'd rather them not be content.
Yeah. You know, my wife and I have taken the approach that we're more concerned with their attitude and their heart... More than the content.
Right.
There we go.
Right.
Okay. Of course, we are wary of content, but take into consideration their maturity as to how they handle and respond to things.
Very mature way of handling that,
If they see someone get violently dispatched and shout out, awesome!
Hey, okay. Here comes from a veteran. Okay? He just used a veteran term. Dispatched. I've never ever used that word in place of somebody being killed. I love it, and thank you for your service, Patron Saint Philip.
Yes,
thank you very much. So it's like if they see someone get violently dispatched
and shout out, "Awesome!"
Oh, big warning then, right there.
Yeah, and then post up for a high five.
Yes.
Then we know that they're not ready to handle that level of content.
Right.
There have been times when one of our sons had let us know that they didn't like something because of the content, despite us thinking it would be okay.
Oh, that's kind of
like,
yes.
Yeah.
That's one of the greatest feelings as a parent when your child says, "I shouldn't have watched that," or even better yet, "I'm not going to watch that. I don't think it's appropriate for me." My 12-year-old says that. It's not appropriate.
He says, "This is a proud moment for any parent."
Oh, yeah.
"When their child shows that they are thinking for themselves and exercising maturity, wisdom, and discretion."
Yes.
That's what we want to teach our kids.
Amen.
Great special episode, guys. I look forward to hearing what the next one will be all about. Hashtag my wee lad Gimlet. Gimlet.
Yes. Great thoughts. As always. I mean, what... I don't even need to say that. It's just a given. It's a given. From now on until Kingdom Come, anything that Patron Saint Philip presents at King Philip's Stables is great thoughts. Lots of wisdom, encouragement, all the good things.
There you go.
And none of the bad. So again, thank you so much, Philip, and great thoughts. Any other feedback?
Oh, no, that's it.
No, that was it. Okay.
Well-mannered frivolity.
We can exhale now. Okay.
Okay, so I'm now on to Doctor Who Season 6.
Doctor Who?
Yes, Season 6. And I have decided that Matt Smith is okay. He's A-okay. I think I'm getting pretty far into Season 6 and getting close to Season 7. So, Brendan... Now, Patron St. Philip wanted you to start watching Episode 5. You could just go ahead and start there.
Season 5.
Episode 1 of Season 5.
Yeah.
And so you got some catching up to do. And I could see by your well-mannered frivolity that you have started watching...
Parks and Recreation.
What is that? What is that? Like park rangers going around and picking up trash and stuff?
No, Michael.
You could be watching Doctor Who, a great Christ figure.
Oh, sir.
Yes.
Sir. What has attracted me to Parks and Recreation is the character Leslie Knope, played by Amy Poehler. She Saturday Night Live alumnus.
Okay.
Michael.
I've never watched Saturday Night Live.
Let me just tell you, it's free on Yahoo.
Okay.
Okay. That's all you need to know. But no, Parks and Rec, you know, it's gotten all this hype. I mean, the series is finished. They're no more new episodes coming out. And that's what I like to watch for whenever I want to start a series. I want someone to spoil the ending for me. Just go ahead, give it to me straight. And then from that, let me know if the whole series is worth it. Because if it's not worth it, I'm not going to invest the time.
Okay.
And I got a lot of feedback saying, look, Parks and Rec is worth it. So I started it, and here's where I'm at. I'm about to finish season two. The character Leslie Knope is one that only wants to do the right thing. And she wants to do it in the right way, too. That's what's
cleaning up parks? I think everybody should do that.
But she takes it personally.
Oh, okay. Like, well, I think everybody should do that, too.
Well, I agree. But
Quit littering, people.
She stands out. She stands out in the people in the office in which she works. You know, she stands out as the beacon of what's right. Everyone else around her is, you know,
does she take somehow, a shellacking for that?
She does.
Oh, good.
She does.
So then it can be an analogy for a Christian.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's why I like it right now. And my thing is, I really want to see how she comes out in the end. Because
she dies.
No, she.
Oh, okay.
I don't think she dies. She was in the last season. She could have died on the last episode.
Okay.
But
she's
no.
from Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
She slips on a banana peel right next to the trash can.
you know, just tumbled off the stage. But no, I'm liking
screen
it right
goes
now.
Dark.
Yeah, yeah.
Credits roll.
So anyway,
Fiend.
Yes, I've started Parks and Rec, and I'll get back to y'all later.
All right. I watched Thor: The Dark World this past week because I hadn't seen it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had started watching, speaking of Netflix, I had started watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a while ago. Well, then I got to an episode, I don't even know what season I'm on, but I got an episode where at the very beginning it says, it has a disclaimer, the events in this episode take place immediately after Thor: Dark World. Dope! Okay, so I'll put that on the back burner. I can't watch that until I watch Thor: Dark World. Don't do that to me, Marvel. Come on, you get enough money from me.
Oh, they can do whatever they want.
Obviously,
if you haven't heard,
yeah, they're owned by the mouse.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So we watched Thor: Dark World this past week.
How was it? Because I have yet to see it myself.
I loved it.
Oh, good.
But I love the character. I mean, FCC's very own Hank Williams as Loki. Did a great job.
Good.
Oh, and there's a nice little twist in there that I really enjoyed.
Good.
Good battle scenes. Oh, Doctor Who, the Doctor Who, my doctor, Chris Eccleston, is the bad guy in there.
Who?
Yes. Some dark elf thing. And so it's really neat. I want it on Patron St. Philip Presents. The list! Because it's been a while since we have done a superhero movie. So let's bump that up. Let's bump that up close.
Now, was this one directed by Kenneth Branagh?
I don't know. I didn't pay attention.
Okay. Well, he directed the first one.
Okay.
He also directed the new Cinderella movie.
Okay. Oh, Lockhart.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Gilderoy. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Gilderoy.
Well, I'm going to have to look that up then.
Okay.
So anyway, get that on the list. And which reminds me, when is Avengers Age of Ultron coming out on
it should be soon.
Home? Yeah.
It's already available for pre-order on all the streaming
Good.
Services.
Then listeners,
so
look for that soon on Finding Christ in Cinema.
I'd say, given our schedule that we may have coming up, if we don't hit it in September, in this month, we'll definitely hit it in November.
Hey, why don't you go to the movies anymore?
Oh, okay. So the Monday movie review.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, is that like kaput? What happened?
No. It was because of Horse Show.
It wasn't a good movie?
That was, no. The Horse Show.
The Horse Show in Shelbyville.
Which, by the way, I had a box of donuts for you, but I left it out on the counter. And the fam devoured. Gone.
Maybe next year.
It was like Nicolas Cage. Gone in 60 seconds.
Oh, boy. There's always next year.
There is always next year.
Yeah. I could go into the Tesseract in the three-dimensional construct of five-dimensional reality. And
that's right, you could.
And go to that moment in time.
But no, okay, seriously.
Knock some books on the donuts.
Just because it was.
Why are these donuts on the floor?
There's a ghost. There's a ghost. Who's knocking down these donuts? It was just so busy in town and so busy at work that whenever I had the chance to go to a movie, I was just tired And then whenever I, you know, whenever I had the, whenever I didn't have time, I had that longing. It just, it never worked out. So I just decided, you know what? I'm just going to give it a break for a little bit. But next week, baby, I'm coming back.
Oh, good.
Because Labor Day, I saw War Room.
Oh, the latest from the Kendrick brothers or whatever. Yes. A Christian film. Don't say a word. We want everybody to go to the website on Monday. Look for it on Monday.
Monday morning, yep.
For Brendan's Monday movie review at Christ in Cinema. Brendan? The lightning round! What do you got?
Oh, I have another Spotify find for you.
Okay.
And I'm sure the soundtrack is available, you know, wherever finer soundtracks are served.
Yes.
Carter Burwell's score for the Coen Brothers remake of True Grit. I love this. Have you seen their version of it?
I have not.
Have you seen the original?
Rooster Cogburn?
Yes.
And, yeah.
Have you seen the original?
Well, yeah, a million years ago.
I'm making sure.
Yeah.
I'm just making sure I'm still tracking with
you.
I love their version because Jeff Bridges is Rooster Cogburn.
Does he?
Yes, he does.
His new voice.
Yeah. He says, "I'm aiming to kill you in 1 minute, Ned." Like, I call that bold talk for a one-eyed fat man. It's just so good. It's got so many good moments.
Right.
But the soundtrack is really cool because what Carter Burwell has done, he's taken some of the older, I would say like the Manifest Destiny era hymns.
Oh.
And he has like morph them into like a cinematic score.
Wow.
Like he mainly uses Leaning on the Everlasting
Arms. As a Spotify user, I am going to add that to my playlist. Your first recommendation that I'm all over. See, now you know how to sell it to me.
Oh, well, there you go.
You know how to pitch me a soundtrack or a recommendation for music.
Jeff Bridges, I got it.
There you go. And old hymns.
Oh, well, there you go. Oh, next week, because I found another one, and I wanted to do that one, but then I realized that I had this one saved up.
Gosh, now Brendan's lightning round, his Spotify lightning round by Brendan Taylor.
Hey, for the next couple weeks, it just might be.
Okay, hey, you know, maybe I'll jump in on the act, because I got some Spotify picks, too.
Hey, there you go.
All right, so there you go. True Grit, Carter Burwell.
Carter Burwell.
Hey, what is coming up next week on Finding Christ in Cinema? Or the next episode, should say.
Did we decide? We did. We did. Oh.
What is it?
Are you going to do something?
No. I'm flinching.
What
is it?
We're going to be going to the Thunderdome.
Oh.
But not that movie in particular, but we're going to be looking at the latest iteration in Mad Max.
I can't believe Fury I agreed Road. To this.
Yes.
Please.
No, Michael.
I'm worried.
Hey, filters.
Okay.
You'll need filters.
Okay.
Filters abound, but I think it's a solid movie.
All right.
And there's a reason why it was Summer's biggest hit, pretty much.
Okay. All right. So Mad Max starring Bane.
Yes.
I didn't know what would break first.
The thunder or the dome?
All right. Finding Christ in Cinema is live in the GCT Network studio each Thursday, Lord willing, at around 3 p.m. Central Time. Join us for live video and especially chat using the chat room and video player at gctnetwork.com/live. Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener-supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. For all things Finding Christ in Cinema, for the podcast, for Brendan's Monday movie reviews, for all the social sites that we are involved in, get over to our official website at christincinema.com. You can send us email to fcc@gctnetwork.com.
If you want to send us a voicemail, you can call the voice line number at 507-407-4286.
Never tell me the odds.
Now, if that number does not tickle your fancy, we actually have a special reserve landline that we keep down in the cellar. It's 507-407-GCTN. Now, let's say you want to listen to the good old podcast, and you've run out of falafel.
I don't like falafel.
You've run out of duct tape.
Love duct tape.
And you're a sad, strange little man.
You're a sad, strange little man.
Boom! You can go to iTunes, you can go to Stitcher, and you can go to TuneIn Radio. Search them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
And for all the shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers in Texas, the Theonauts! Get over to our official website at gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
You know, I still think Ron is just saying his name right there.
Fool of a took.
And that is a wrap!
You know I hate comedians.
A miracle man.
I don't understand.
Yeah, cut to it.
What a bunch of hippy dippy baloney.
Sentimental hogwash.
One does not simply walk into Mordor.
It's pretty mind blowing.
Potatoes. I told you he was tricksy.
Never tell me the odds.
Why?
It's a trap.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
GCTnetwork.com. This is your Great Commission transmission.
Can we get pumped? I need to get pumped.
Want to get pumped up?
But not as long as last time. But this is enough.
It's a trap.
Not tell anyone else. Your bursting. And not tell anyone else of your bursting. And not tell anyone else of your bursting.
That's just as fascinating as the first 89 times you told me that.
I'm afraid you just turned on loud.
Not tell anyone else of your bursting.
Don't tell me anything, Huey Lewis. Go back to your news, which I think's pretty old by now.
Sentimental hogwash. Sentimental hogwash. Sentimental hogwash.
Not tell anyone else.
Woo! Alrighty.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel good. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel good.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
I'm going to include that on the end. That's going to be our outro today.
Okay.